Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's United States Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean all three of us. I'm joined by none other than Mr. Timo Albers-Daly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
Soggy.
Soggy. It has been a bit of a wet day in places. Weirdly warm, though. 19 degrees here at its highest, but also wet. So, yeah, I feel your soggulations. Timo, have you been soggy?
No, warm and dry, mercifully, today. Thank you. And aside from that, doing not too shabbily overall. And quite glad we're at almost the end of this ridiculously long break between Grand Prix, and it's not even the summer or the winter. It's an autumn break. It's not necessary.
Yeah, it's sort of like spring break, but for fall, if you're American. Which makes sense, because, of course, this is our preview for the United States Grand Prix. Yeah, it's a good one to do. I say, obviously, I ask at the start of this, how are we all? And all three of us are here. Someone who isn't here, technically, is Daniel Ricciardo, though, who has now departed from Formula One. There was speculation, of course, going into the Singapore Grand Prix that maybe it would be his last outing in a Formula One car. And that turned out to very much be the case, certainly for this season, though. I think doors are being kept open and possibilities may be on the horizon. But regardless, Daniel Ricciardo has left RB and has been replaced by Liam Lawson, not for the first time in their careers. And Liam will be in for the final six Grand Prix of the 2024 season. Liam will run the number 30 on his car, not the number 95, which is tremendously disappointing. And in doing so, Isaac Hadjar is now promoted to Red Bull's reserve driver role, which is quite exciting. It'd be quite fun to see him have to step in for someone.
Exciting slash concerning.
Put the angry Frenchman in for a race. Like, I want to see Perez have to like pull out for some strange reason, and he gets
replaced. Just watch Magnussen just demolish him immediately. Go and get out my way.
No. Yeah, I think that would be quite impressive to see Isaac Hadjar do something. Anyway, Helmut Marko, oddly enough, had been pushing for Daniel Ricciardo to be dropped as early as the Spanish Grand Prix this year. And it's not the only Red Bull news, as they had actually considered selling AlphaTauri before rebranding it to VCarb this season. So clearly they weren't too happy with the overall performance of the team and sort of where it was going, the expense it was incurring. So looking at just getting shot of the entire thing. And on top of that, Sergio Perez has responded to rumours with his departure with a short clip on Twitter of the Wolf of Wall Street suggesting that he is sticking around, or that he isn't going anywhere, with an expletive somewhere in that sentence.
Which part of the film was that from? Was it before or after he went to prison? Spoilers. Because that would be quite funny as a bit of a prelude to what's coming, potentially.
I'll level with you. I haven't seen the film.
Poor form, Jesse. Poor form. Excellent film. You should watch it.
I'll put it on my list.
You really should. Ellie Mae looks like she's seen it, and I'm just going to assume she has, because it'd be sad if both of you haven't seen it. As for Ricciardo, though, obviously it wasn't the season any of us would have hoped for, in part due to some of the team's woeful strategy calls, like Singapore, for example, being a prime example there. It still feels very unceremonious, even for Red Bull. I'm not sure what they're hoping to achieve with the constructors battle with Lawson instead of him with just six Grand Prix to go. He kind of needs to put in a Colapinto-esque performance, otherwise you've got to be asking what's the point. Cutting Ricciardo just before Austin of all races too was just awful PR. And the fact that this wasn't announced prior to Singapore, despite everyone kind of knowing, but not, robbed everyone. Ricciardo would have been able to give him a send-off. And when you remember, this is a driver who won more Grand Prix than Norris and Piastri combined at this point in time, and beat both Vettel and Verstappen when partnered with them, as well as being one of the few drivers who beat Mercedes during their dominance. And won McLaren's first Grand Prix in 2021 since 2012 with Button in Brazil, despite having, like, Norris as the wunderkind back then in the Team B team during his tenure there. You think, come on, guys, you could have done a much better job than this. You thought Williams dropping Sargeant after Zandvoort instead of during the summer break was bad enough, but this makes that look like nothing in comparison. Red Bull Sky and the rest of the media handled all this terribly for me, and Ricciardo just, he deserved a lot better for his F1 exit. He's not one of these drivers who's in there for 5 minutes. He's an established kind of titan, you know, of the sport of yesteryear. So, real shame. And this is after weeks of calming down.
I can usually, when we do this podcast, rule with my head and not with my heart. And usually kind of all of that I can put aside quite easily, because emotions, I don't feel them. But with this, I just can't. I mean, for me, it's so difficult because although I'd sort of kind of followed the sport vaguely, it was Danny Rick that got me into it and kind of got me into this whole mad journey that we've kind of been on, met you guys and all of that. And it's kind of like, well, no, it's over, like not over, but it's, I never got there to sort of see him race in F1, be there. And I don't know, I just found his departure really, really sad. It was kind of, that was the only emotion I had, was just pure sadness and sort of
It's one of
heartbreak.
those ones you they put up his final lap, which obviously was the fastest lap of the Grand Prix from Singapore on YouTube, and I thought it was just going to be one of those enjoy the video moments for just you watching a car, you hear it as it is, nothing interfering. But then Will Buxton was talking over and kind of ruined it for me because I was like, this doesn't need to, this isn't needed for it. I know what's going on. Just give me that. So I just took it on mute, and obviously that made things a lot sadder. But it just felt like that was. The whole thing summed up, it was this last lap, and there's no one there because everyone's kind of everywhere else on the track, and they're not with him because he was pushed out at the kind of back end of the grid at that point. And it just, like you say, it's just sad. He's a driver who, like, for you, and they got so many people into the sport, and then you think about what he did with Netflix as well, about to get even more people in, and it's one of the few. Talking points, and one of the few drivers who everyone from that Netflix era and everyone before kind of agrees on and gets behind. Because whilst we always say that being a nice driver or being a nice person isn't necessarily good enough reason to stay, we always knew he had it in him. It was just the cars weren't always there for him. And like I said before, strategy sometimes plays a part in it. And it just feels like if this was Sergeant or Joe or maybe even Bottas to an extent. I'm trying to see those sorts of drivers, Gasly or Ocon, maybe drivers have been around for a while, but haven't had that much of an impact in comparison regard. You could maybe get away with it. It was still smart a bit, I think. But this is a multiple Grand Prix winner, one of the most successful Australian drivers in history. Been racing for all different teams for over God knows how many years now. And it just for F1 being as big as it is now, that just seemed like a massive end goal that no one thought to step in and sort that out. You talk about before, Jesse, with the whole situation involving Formula One and Perez, for example, and like, oh, potential for getting involved in some places but not in others to try and cover your financial aspects. Would Ricardo not fall under that purview were you to do such a thing?
Yeah, on the one
Just
hand,
in
it
terms of a
is.
send off, not necessarily even keeping
Yeah.
him for the rest of the season.
On the one hand, the cut and thrust of Formula One and certainly of that of Red Bull is something we've almost missed for quite some time. Red Bull used to be the team that would chop and change and drop drivers at the slightest sort of murmur of, oh, I think Red Bull's a bit too sugary for me. And but the one with Ricciardo, it just feels that bit different. I think it is because he's been such a mainstay of the sport for so long. He's been such a mainstay of that team as well. He was one of the sort of formative drivers that really proved that it was a dynamic and hugely exciting team that sort of followed on and carried that torch on in the post-Vettel days. He was quick against their world champion in their car and then sort of carried that on and took the fight to Bottas, to Hamilton at the Mercedes, took it to the Ferraris when they were getting quick through that sort of early 2010s. He's an exciting driver, and he's one that ultimately I think has to be thanked for revolutionizing the sport in part due to Drive to Survive. As much as people love to bemoan it and the fans that it brings in, without it, Formula One would not be in the strong place it is today. And a huge part of that is down to Danny Rick, the character, that smile, the sort of the fact that he speaks with no filter a lot of the time made it quite as appealing as it was. So to see him get such a bum send off does great. As someone who loves Formula One for its racing, for its technicality, the emotion and the sort of human aspect in this one does still connect and does still hurt. And yeah, as much as I'm excited to see Lawson, I can understand why they're putting Lawson in early, especially if they're expecting him to do well next year. It gives him a chance to bed in, work with the team, start developing the car, getting set up sorted. Logically, I can't fault them for that. But again, it's been, what, 4 weeks since we found out this news, and it's still, I won't say it's raw, but it's a wound that's still annoying when someone pokes it. Yeah. And We'll see what happens. He could come back. He is, weirdly enough, a driver that could well go on to do the Motorsport Triple Crown because he has famously won the Monaco Grand Prix. There is no reason that he couldn't jump into a hypercar, do Le Mans, and do well. He is an incredibly talented driver. And with the right mindset, the right coaching, I think that is perfectly within reason. All that then leaves is the sort of mystical bowl that is the Indy 500. He could do it. He is on as good a footing as Fernando Alonso is for going off and doing the Motorsport Triple Crown. And I would love to see him do that.
I mean, you've got to remember as well, this man came third in the Drivers' Championship with a car that wasn't always at its best.
It was an incredibly edgy car at times, and it was never certainly the second fastest car on track at points. So it's the achievements he made were phenomenal and remain phenomenal. I think when you look at them within the context of which those achievements were made, it is sublime. And he is an incredibly quick and talented driver. I just think that he's been mismanaged, mishandled, and misled for the more recent stages of his career. And I think that is also the overarching disappointment. But fingers crossed, we'll see him back in motorsport and back enjoying himself. He's had what looks like a nice sort of 4 weeks away from the sport, relaxing with friends, kicking back, and just sort of having some time to himself, which I think is well earned and well deserved. Obviously, Danny Ric leaves, but we do have a familiar face, or at least a familiar brand, returning to the sport, and that is Toyota. They are back. Toyota Gazoo Racing, specifically, essentially the Marques Motorsport Performance arm, have signed on with Haas as technical partners. They'll be working with the American outfit, sharing technical expertise, knowledge, and resources. What this also opens up to Haas is the chance to finally have a sim rig, something they actually haven't had as a professional outfit since they joined the sport, which is actually quite baffling when you find that out. Toyota branding will be on the cars from this weekend and marks the manufacturer's return to the sport after a 15-year hiatus. Haas will continue, however, to use Ferrari power units until 2028. Given that Haas is around one-tenth the size of the biggest teams, this is a huge step forward and could do well with propelling them up the ranks to be a real thorn in the side of bigger outfits. Add in the exciting talent of Oli Bearman and Esteban Ocon on the horizon, plus the clear and concise growth the team has seen under Ayo Komatsu. This is a really auspicious move, and one that's, again, really rekindled my love for this sort of underling team punching its way against far, far bigger teams. You look at the size and the mass of Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes. You look at what Haas have been able to do, certainly over the past few seasons, where they're scrapping around in the points, upsetting the big boys, Magnussen getting that run right for Brazil and qualifying well, and what it meant to that team. Now, to have this backing from Toyota, one of the world's largest motoring manufacturers, just sort of going, okay, we'll give you a little bit here, a little bit there. We'll give you the opportunity to do this and sort of develop things independently for once. They won't be a complete customer team. They'll be able to be a team under their own wing.
Say
I
one thing
think
just because I thought it off the top of my head before I forget it. Sorry, anyway. And that's Toyota coming back in. Does this then potentially mean that down the line, say 2026, when Ocon's had a year and they realize that was a bad idea, Yuki potentially has somewhere else he can go as there's now a Japanese connection there? And
I was gonna say with Toyota, they I think part of it is that they want to bring up young, talented Japanese drivers, and this is the way that they are going to do it. So it may not necessarily be Yuki Tsunoda, but I think we will definitely see more Japanese talent within F1.
although
Generation or
Iwasu
two
and Miata
afterwards.
as the next couple of obvious names to go up on that list. So yeah, maybe they're thinking something along those lines. And a bit like you, Jesse, it was a surprise, but a welcome one, very much so. And especially after so long and in such a we're getting involved but not too involved kind of way, as a testing the water situation. And friend of the podcast Race Recap and I discussed the possibility of Toyota returning to F1 back on an episode of Pub Chat a bit. Like the Argentina situation we'll get to shortly. And I don't think whilst we wanted Toyota to come back, we actually expected movement on this front quite as soon or in this way. I'll echo what you said though, Jesse, and agree that this could be exactly what Haas needs to make that next step up the grid just in time for the new regulations. Give them a year, a little bit like the new drivers to bed in, get everything sorted, get all their ducks in a row, and then let's see what happens.
Yeah, I don't want to boil it down to sort of just simply nationality, but what Ayo Komatsu's been able to do with this team over the course of this year has been phenomenal. I know every week we sort of remark at Zak Brown bringing in yet another sponsor for that already littered McLaren, and he's done it again for this race weekend. But what Ayo's done is and turn around this team has been genuinely really interesting. And you look at his progress, the way he sort of started out at BAR, Renault, he sort of signed on with Romain Grosjean, was his engineer for ages, and then obviously followed him to Haas. And now the sort of progression he's had has been phenomenal. His understanding of Formula One, the team structure, the processes, seeing what goes into making a good and competitive team is exceptional. And yeah, there's a lot more to IO than I think a lot of people really give him credit for. And I think if this Toyota deal is anything to go by, it's really sort of his line in the sand, his sort of marker to go, no, guys, don't underestimate what I'm getting up to here. This is good and this is big.
The last bit I want to say there is that you've got a subtle battle behind the scenes now, brewing between Honda and Toyota, which is always just fun.
Could be exciting. And again, it depends what Honda's able to do with Aston Martin moving forwards. Again, a team that sort of tumbled backwards to the midfield and sort of almost languishing behind Haas at points when it comes to pace. It'll be interesting to see where they're able to direct their car next year.
I mean, I think you've both sort of said it. This will hopefully be a huge step forward for the team. I mean, the reason behind their partnership is, like you said, it's down to Haas lacking resources in certain areas, which Toyota can ultimately provide them with. Toyota have their European base in Germany, where I imagine Haas can use sort of their resources and facilities there, such as the wind tunnel. And like you said, they don't even have their own simulator. They were using Ferraris, but they could sort of do that sort of in sort of the winter testing period, but throughout the season, it was limited with most of the team, being in the UK, and then Haas thinking it's kind of unfair to ask their staff to travel to Italy to use the simulator when they're already having to travel so much. And now with Toyota's help, they're building one at Haas's UK base in Banbury. So this is, I think, just so exciting for the team.
It's a big line in the sand and a great step forward. Meanwhile, well, I mean, there's two great links to this. Obviously, it's team stepping forward, making these big changes ahead of 2026, another change coming ahead of 2026, and also Ayo Komatsu in 2006, 2 decades ago, signed on with Renault as a race engineer. Alpine will stop using Renault engines from 2026. This is something which we've sort of heard rumblings of since the Italian Grand Prix when the engine workers at Viry-Châtillon went on strike. There's been all sorts of rumblings behind the scenes since as well, but Alpine have announced that engine work at Viry-Châtillon will stop after the 2025 season and the site will be transformed into a hypertech HQ for Renault Alpine. Enstone will become the whole Formula One headquarters, while the France site will host a new state-of-the-art engineering center that will bring together some of the best talent in the world to contribute to the development of ultra-high performance vehicles and innovations in cutting-edge technologies for Alpine and the Renault Group. It makes a measure of sense as you can win as an engine customer. Look at what Red Bull and McLaren have been able to do over the years. So it's no doubt something that's inspired this move from Renault Alpine. The question is, who do they go to for an engine? Mercedes is the most likely option ultimately. Ford is on an exclusive deal with Red Bull. Audi is unproven for the 2026 season. You'd have to be mad to buy an engine from someone who's never made one before. I mean, it's worked for previous teams, but there we go. Ilmor, look it up. Fantastic history. Ferrari are an option, as are Honda. So we'll see what happens. But Mercedes seems to be sort of the best bet to jump into. But when it comes to Ferrari, a lot of the Renault engineers have been snapped up by the Scuderia in the wake of this, as people have gone, screw that, I'm leaving now anyway. So it's been a bit of an exodus already, and Ferrari has gone, okay, you seem pretty talented. Why don't you move over here and we'll see what we can do for you? But the whole sort of France Hypertech HQ is interesting. Alpine have just unveiled their Le Mans spec hydrogen powered hypercar, which is a very interesting thing, but I don't know how real it's going to be. And they've seen some results. I don't want to call it successes, but they've seen results certainly with their hybrid hypercar series in sort of world endurance class as well. So I'm not sure what Renault Alpine's long game plan is with this one. It baffles me a little bit, I'll say as much.
Well, you've got to think as well, Renault recently have been making such sort of fantastic street cars that it's kind of sad that it hasn't come over to their racing as such.
It's sort of the inverse of the Ferrari argument. Alpine,
I
the
was about to say it's a bit
A110,
like Ferrari, isn't it? They'll just
the
make.
A110 is a really nice car, but any Renault road car at the moment is a bit sort of eh. They've got some interesting electric cars coming back, the Renault 4, the Renault 5, the new Twingo. They will look perfectly fun
They're
as road cars. They're exciting. They could be interesting cars, but ultimately,
have a
just
baguette holder for an
yeah.
hour anyway.
But ultimately, I'm just sort of left wanting for their Formula One, and ultimately, I think that could this could be the start of the downfall, dare I say? I don't know. Might be a bit early
Jesse,
to
Jesse,
call.
Jesse. This is all just part of the 100 race plan. Have faith. They have
Which
been
race are we
committed to
on
this
now? Because we
plan.
keep restarting the 100 race plan.
Well, this is actually yet again a restart of 100, probably. I have no idea. But, it's
It
all
probably
part of the
restarted when
plan.
they
You've
signed
got
the
to
chap
have
from
some
Hi-Tech.
faith in this.
So we must be on to race 96 now.
Who knows? But honestly, supplying them with Mercedes engines doesn't interest me. None of the options you've listed really interests me. I think just sell the team to Peugeot or Citroën, see if some of the Frenchies can actually make a proper go of it. Either that or do what Sauber did with Audi and entice a new
Constructor in
someone to come in with them. Immediately
Andretti
when
and
I wrote
Cadillac.
this, I had Toyota as one of the options. Probably won't happen. I suggested Porsche as an alternative, because that would be quite
Porsche,
fun.
maybe, but I don't think Volkswagen would want to commit.
Porsche Peugeot. There we go.
Porsche, I don't
Just
think so,
rolls off the
because
tongue nicely.
Volkswagen isn't going to pour money into two Formula One teams. I don't think it's going to do that. Volkswagen's
Just have some
too
creative
risk
accounting
averse.
so they don't notice. It's fine.
Peugeot would be exciting because I want them to bring back their diesel performance arm like they had for the 90X HDIs at Le Mans, those diesel Le Mans cars that just sort of go, and all you hear is turbo noise, and you're like, oh, that's impressive. And like, it makes 1 million pound foot of torque and 40 horsepower. You're like, that's fantastic.
Decision was made on a napkin in a pub to go diesel, I'm pretty sure.
A lot of the best things are.
Yeah, just sort of back of the envelope, sort of
All the more reason we should go to a
mathematics.
pub.
Speaking of someone who's possibly spent a bit too much time down the pub, or at least watching Formula One, is Argentina's sports minister, who has recently or reportedly recommissioned the Autódromo de Buenos Aires Oscar y Juan Gálvez following Franco Colapinto's successes so far. The sport has seen a revival in popularity over the years in Argentina and a few more sort of levels of revival since with Franco stepping up. And yeah, the result is Argentina sports minister Daniel Scioli has called for renovations to the circuit, which hasn't hosted a Formula One race since 1998. So, yeah, as long as Ellie May's been alive, there hasn't been a race at that circuit.
It's quite interesting this. I spoke with this is two news stories in the same podcast where something's eerily come back a lot sooner than I expected, with Fox Sports F1 Argentina presenter, commentator and journalist Florencia Anderson about the motorsport situation in Argentina last year and the dire state it was in at that point. And we talked about Colapinto's possible influence in motorsport and how he's made it to F1. It might lead to like general overall lowering costs of motorsport in the country, bearing in mind the economic state, and kickstart as a kind of South American renaissance. And you've seen it a bit more now with the feeder series with NF1 with Colapinto Ducks and Zegers Zeta Seres, and a little bit with Montoya a bit as well. And I think it definitely needs momentum, and this spell F1 for Colapinto will hopefully spark it back into existence. But I'm not against this because I think one of the things was that the track that's being revitalized now, or is in the process of being revitalized, really does need it. But that's in theory quite a straightforward and easier thing to do, because it's not that you've got to build it all from scratch, you've just got to update it slightly. And if that can be a little bit like what we had in 2020 with some of the venues that took on a Grand Prix during that season, just to test some waters a bit, I'm all up for it, and then trying to open the region back up.
Mugello, Portimão, that sort of thing. We'll move away from Argentina to the FIA president, Mohamed Ben Sulayem, who was lashed out at the British media for being biased against him, to which I say we should be doing a better job, shouldn't he? This all comes to a head when he recently came out and said that he thinks the FIA doesn't get enough credit for its work. But considering how many other racing leagues and formats have also got a bone to pick with the organisation, this suggests that it's a relatively deep-rooted and broad-spread issue. Eight-time WRC champion Sebastian Ogier said on the matter, "We've been told from the top of the FIA that we need to shut our mouths." So clearly this isn't just an F1 thing, and maybe Ben Sulayem wasn't the best candidate for the role of FIA president. I'm just going to put that out there as an idea. I might have said it at the time. I don't know. You're remaining completely voiceless on this because you at some point might run into sort of FIA certification, but I don't mind the criticism. I think, look, If the teams and drivers are speaking out against it, what they're going to do? Get rid of all the teams and drivers? They'll have no sport to commit. Anyway, speaking of teams, and certainly the interesting state of affairs when it comes to Andretti, Zak Brown joined and then left the board of directors for the Andretti Acquisition Corp. The general function of this group was set up essentially as like a sort of buying operation for Andretti, so they could buy things. And it was essentially supposed to be a way that would have brought Andretti into Formula One. And rumors suggested that the aims of Zak Brown were to sort of bring Andretti into Formula One in a sibling setup, in the same way that Red Bull and RB have, something that Zak Brown has spoken out about previously, which he thinks is a little unfair. So his solution was, well, if they're not going to play fair, might as well play dirty with them.
I
There are
wouldn't want
shenanigans afoot here, aren't there? Mm.
I'm just a bit sus on the whole thing. I'm gonna be uncharacteristic and measured and wait until I know more on all fronts before giving my full take on this.
I wouldn't want Andretti to come in as a sister team to McLaren, though. I think they deserve more than that, and we deserve more than that. We don't want another midfield team to come in. We want a championship potentially winning team coming in.
Yeah, I think having a proper rival on the field would be a lot more fun than simply having a second Toro Rosso. So we'll see what happens with that one. Meanwhile, in the world of Formula E, that outfit has, or sort of layout has, confirmed that it'll be hosting an all-women pre-season test ahead of next year's round. We have more on that in our F1 Academy review, which is out now on audio platforms, and probably by the time you listen to this, will be out on YouTube. So go find it, give it a listen. We go through the drivers that have been confirmed at the time of recording last night, and some of the ones that are also speculated to have seats in this fantastic test and opportunity that's coming up. In more certain news, Race of Champions is off to Australia. This will be the first time ever in the Southern Hemisphere, hosted at the Accor Stadium in the Sydney Olympic Park on March 7th and 8th next year. It'll be two huge nights of racing and season celebration of motorsport, pitting some of the best from Australia against the superstars of Formula One, IndyCar, Le Mans, World Rally, and Rallycross. Seven-time V8 Supercar champion and Australian motorsport legend Jamie Whincup will be in action. I don't know who his teammate is for Team Australia, but we do know about the Team Germany entry, which is Seb Vettel and Mick Schumacher, reunited again for some motoring shenanigans in Australia.
I do love this for Australia. I can't wait to watch this next year. And the last one was a great watch, and it's going to be such a contrasting comparison because there was obviously snow and ice and all that fun stuff, and then you've got Sydney. And also, plug for ourselves here, check out our review from that Race of Champions event with friend of the podcast, Megan Mara, if you want to relive it.
Lot of exciting stuff going on there. It always just seems to be an absolute melee of madness of just drivers going round and round and round.
It's because I said that I was thinking about going to it next year that they've decided, you know what, put it to the other side of the world.
Will you learn? Stop saying what you're saying. It
Stop
doesn't go
saying
well.
things, Ellie Mae. That way, no one will sort of act contra to what you say. Like, I want to go to this. We're going to put it as far away from it as possible. I want this person to do well. Make them lose. I put this person in my fantasy team. They're going to lose.
It's twisted fate. What can I say?
Yet with predictions where she's silent but writes them down.
Yeah, I'll
Surprisingly
usually
good.
say it, and then she sort of just nods quietly. That seems to be the trick. We need to get her to read out her predictions. Matt, perhaps that'll do it. Anyway, more news. We've got a lot of news for this one. It's been 4 weeks, and we sort of forgot to podcast, so we've sort of accumulated a lot of news. Formula One and LVMH have announced a new 10-year partnership, likely replacing the one the sport has with Rolex. This will see brands like Louis Vuitton, Moët Chandon, and Tag Heuer joining the sport. Better still, Hot Wheels have joined foot with Formula One. There are Hot Wheels Formula One toys out at the moment. I believe you can go and buy them. I need to go shopping. Equally, this could also see Mattel joining Formula One. It's sort of part of the toy brand joining up with them, which is interesting because Mattel has various other marks, including Barbie. And obviously, they now have a film company too, which is why we got the Barbie film, but potentially also opens the possibility of a Hot Wheels Formula One film, which I don't know, could be exciting.
Fun fact, before F1 got their Hot Wheels car, I managed to get myself a Formula E Hot Wheels car when I went to the race in London. They were just giving those away to certain people, so
Oh, very nice. Is it of any specific sort of team, or is it just sort of like the
it
Hot
looks a
Wheels
little bit
biled up?
like the Andretti one, but it's a bit generic in the same way that the F1 one was when they announced it.
It looks
But
like the
still
Andretti
very
one because it's
nice and
red.
was the envy of people immediately. You're like, where did you get that from? Oh, sorry, they've run out. Damn.
I would really like one of them, and actually, you've made me incredibly jealous now.
What I do.
Yeah. I
To see
mean,
a family car at Bicester the other
this
day.
is true. This is true. I mean, we've seen Barbie in Formula One before as well, because there have been Barbie motorsport crossovers before. We've seen her in all sorts of sort of motorsport guises. So we'll see what Mattel does in this ongoing partnership. And last but not least, when it comes to the news, Gunther Steiner has opened a guest house. The bed and breakfast called Villa Steiner has opened up in Murano, South Tyrol, and features rooms named after Formula One circuits. It's in the city where he was born and raised, and funnily enough, he actually lives next door when he's in Austria. But don't worry, he won't be serving you your eggs in the morning. He said they've actually got a professional team in to do that, so it won't be too sweary.
I don't know, I'd quite like him to make me breakfast.
I will leave you to enjoy that daydream. We'll move on then to some Austin fun facts. And now, with no Daniel Ricciardo on the grid, this will be the first Austin Grand Prix to be held without the number three car on the grid. Interestingly enough, Lewis Hamilton and Sergio Perez remained the only other drivers to have entered all 11 races at COTA to date. And this weekend, we have some special liveries. Haas, lighthearted, fun. They've got the Screaming Eagle on the side of it. It's what you want from the American outfit. It's fun, it's playful, it's what we want to see. Alpine have gone for one that's a tie-in with the new Indiana Jones game, and quite frankly, isn't as good as the Marco Andretti livery that he ran for, I think it was the Indy 500 in the
We
year they
still
missed.
can't really see it because they keep shining lights on it. Which
Which,
I think probably won't see it properly until Friday, and even then they'll probably just have a helicopter following around everywhere shining this light on it.
do you think it's just the Deadpool livery point
you just
two?
scratch away under the surface, it was there
Yeah.
all along.
Well, there's sort of like a sort of lottery
This is what we
scratcher.
have. They're going to replace helmets with just Indy's hat and just hope no one crashes into them.
With Esteban Ocon, that's not necessarily a given. Look, I think the Marco Andretti Kingdom of the Crystal Skull livery was a lot better, despite the fact that it was objectively a terrible film. But anyway, and McLaren have brought back the chrome livery, and they've got a new sponsor on it too, T-Mobile. Of course, McLaren used to be sponsored by Vodafone. They've now got T-Mobile on the car instead. But yeah, I mean, I don't know where they're going to fit the next sponsor sticker. They're sort of running out of space now. They're just going to have to tow a banner behind the car with additional sponsors.
Yeah, they'll have to go around with a trailer.
Yeah.
Something. That might slow them down, mightn't
Yeah, maybe that's what Max Verstappen wants to happen.
it? Might. Yeah.
Max
There's a
Verstappen's
possibility
might.
it makes them quicker.
Max Verstappen's going to buy a lead mining company and sponsor McLaren with the lead mining company to try and make the car slower.
I mean, they've already got, haven't they? At when you see helmet cam at the sides of. Sort of the sides of the car, they change.
Oh, McLaren do. Yeah, they have the, if you, when you go into T-Cam, they've got the little changing sort of panels that sit next to the under the
I
roll
was
bar.
going to say, actually, in IndyCar, I think it was on Grosjean's car for one or two races towards the end of the season. They have a not a screen as such, but a screen for all intents and purposes on the halo on the inside of it where they can have rolling advertisements on there so that you can get even more bang for your buck that way. So maybe they'll look into that,
It's a
which I
very
think is
American thing.
awkward because it feels like you want to make sure that the driver doesn't be able to see that, isn't able to see
Yeah,
it,
get
because then you're going to
distracted
be
by
you're driving at like 200 miles an hour on an oval and like, shit, and then hit a
it.
wall.
You're sort of driving a 200 mile an hour around Oval, and you go, oh, you should probably think about banking with Chase Bank. But
Did need Liberty Insurance after all. Oh dear.
yeah, oh dear.
We just end up like Times Square or something, wouldn't they? Just their whole car
Constant
has to be
flashing billboards.
flashing advertisements of various.
I mean,
Bit
just
like a
be
play
grateful.
Jesse on the Dying of the Day car, the Aston Martin Vanish.
Yeah.
Just all completely
It's all
blank,
screens
and then
that
it's
can
all
just.
there. It's all screens the whole way around.
I mean, just be grateful that in Formula One, the last lap doesn't have a sponsor unto itself, like it does certainly in like NASCAR and IndyCar, where they go, we're on to
Give
the
it time.
insert sponsorship here, last lap. And you're like, it's an oval. By the time you said the name of the sponsor of the last lap has happened.
Wouldn't it be so Miami, though, to have a Chuck E. Cheese final lap of the Grand Prix?
Oh, there are some truly terrible ones you could get in there, like some absolutely abhorrent American ones. Like certainly for the Las Vegas Grand Prix as well. The Bubba Gump Shrimp Company last lap of the Las Vegas Grand Prix would be something quite hilarious. But at the same time, I want to hear it said.
Send in your best suggestions.
Yeah,
Well,
write in
when
the
you listen
comments
to this
section,
episode.
which ridiculous sponsor would you like to see sponsor a Grand Prix's last lap? Like,
Not think that America is abhorrent, Jesse.
no, I love America. I went to it recently. It was lovely. But no, oh, a really good one would be
The reason he's not allowed there for another 5 years is completely coincidental and nothing to do with it whatsoever.
the cars are coming around Parabolica. They're coming up now to the Dolmio, last lap of the Italian Grand Prix. Dolmio, when's your Dolmio day? And oh, there's been a horrendous crash into turn one.
I think that would piss off so many Italians having Dolmio.
Why do you think I chose it? Because it, anyway,
Such a good day.
we'll move on from our predictions of what might sponsor the last lap of insert Grand Prix here to our predictions for the Austin Grand Prix. And we'll start as always with pole position. And we've got an interesting spread across the board. Timo, I'm going to start with yours.
Lewis Hamilton, he loves Austin. Simple as that.
He does indeed. Ellie Mae, your prediction for pole position is?
Lando Norris.
And I've gone for Charles Leclerc. Lando, I think, is a fairly straightforward shout. I think you're still playing this for the points in the game, not for the excitement.
You guys are getting points.
No, I'm not. That hasn't happened for weeks now.
Was a question, as in you'd actually got some at this point.
Oh, Ellie Mae, how's that for certain?
Well, isn't it Charles Leclerc's birthday today?
It is. Many
It
happy
is.
returns, Charles.
Would you like some Dolmio?
I don't know what the
Buonas.
Italian is for happy birthday. I know in French it's bon
Tanti
anniversaire.
auguri.
No, that's thank you very much, isn't it?
No, close enough.
Feliz cumpleaños. Is that
Spanish.
Spanish? Anyway, podium positions. And Timo and I are sharing the idea, certainly, that Charles Leclerc is going to be stood top it and that Oscar Piastri is going to be somewhere else on it. Timo, talk me through yours.
Leclerc P1, Hamilton P2, Piastri P3, with my thought simply being it keeps the championship nice and spicy.
It would indeed. Ellie Mae, you've gone for a similar theory with yours.
I've gone for Lando Norris win, Carlos Sainz in second, and George Russell in third.
And I've gone for Charles Leclerc win, Piastri second, Carlos Sainz third. So I'm reckon we're going to see double Scuderia and that Piastri just nipping in the middle of it. It's going to be.
You know what's really frustrating, Jesse?
What?
When compleanno.
Was so
It
close.
was that simple.
It was so close.
It's the one time it's
Oh.
not complicated.
It's a bit like when, was it Vettel said to Checo, Merry
Check.
Christmas?
Yeah, Merry Christmas because he'd won the Baku Grand Prix. It was like, I don't know what it is, Feliz Navidad or whatever you say. Moving on to fastest lap, and we've got a tie between you two.
My
Max.
reasoning is pretty easy there. I think it's possibly the same reasoning for you, which you've just said there. It's meant just to happen.
He needs to get points, doesn't he, really? He wants to
He
continue.
wants.
Just the 1 point, actually.
Yeah.
Well, he'll need to get more than one to make the fastest lap sort of count to get that point.
P10 it is.
But crucially, isn't it something ridiculous? Like the gap between he and Norris at the moment is exactly the same as it was coming out of Miami. And that to me is quite a baffling statistic. I think
You would find that baffling, though.
it's a little bit shocking considering how sort of much effort you think Norris has put in with all his wins, but then you just look at the Verstappen consistency behind the scenes. It's just been like, nope.
Well, it's almost like basically saying, well, what was the point of any races between now and Miami?
Yes, if you look at just those two drivers, but I mean, Oscar Piastri's first and
It would
second
have been
wins.
more interesting if you'd eliminated both of them from all of those races, because then you'd have really spicy stuff going on for the championship if neither one had been able to score points.
Yes, you would. But anyway, regardless, I've gone for Lando Norris' fastest lap. I think he could be up to something this weekend. He might not be on the podium, but he's looking to bag just that extra point over Verstappen to try and keep his title fight alive. Wild predictions. Ooh, we'll start with, I
We could all be
think
correct here.
we could all be correct here. This is another week where we could all be correct. We'll start with the most possible, which is Ellie Mae.
I was going to say start. I was going to say have me last because then we finish on a positive.
No, we're going to get crazier as we go
You start
along.
with you, Jesse, because we'll go in chronological order.
Okay,
of
we get.
how this all unfolds.
Okay, in that case, we get double retirements from two teams. So two teams, both drivers out of the race, which could possibly spark Timo.
Two safety cars during the Grand Prix, which is somehow a wild prediction at this point of the season.
And what that would
And
lead to.
it means that both Haas drivers finish within the points.
Hey, we pulled that one off. Thank you. That was actually quite clever of us. Yeah, they are a good set of
But
hard predictions.
the one brain cell that we have between us all
You could
decided to combine and just
tell there
make
was a brief
history.
moment where we paused and gave the next person in line the brain cell, and then they could have the thought before passing it on to the next person. We're not a smart podcast. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on this week's episode. I appreciate it has been mostly news, but of course, it's been 4 weeks and surprisingly a lot of stuff has happened. In the meantime, if you want any more from any of us, Timo, where can you be found? You've got an IndyCar podcast, haven't you?
I do. I don't mention it too often though, because I don't like to talk about myself. But that's going to be available soon as a full season review for this year on the Across the Pond Motorsport Network. There's
Saying
also an
nice things
Indy
about
Next
Stingray Rob.
season review out over there as well at the moment. Mixed things. He could have had a better season, but I still like him because he's called Stingray Roberts. And I've also got an interview out over on Instagram with Turkish Rally co-driver Ipek Özdemir, so go and check that out as well.
Beautiful. Ellie May, where can you be found?
You can find me on Instagram where I've recently posted my pictures from Castle Coombe. Very soggy. I haven't dried off.
No, just still generally damp, a sort of a miasma of wetness in the air. In the meantime, if you
Why
want
I've now bought some dehumidifiers to, try and
dehumidify
dry.
yourself. Very nice. In the meantime, if you want any more from me, you can find me on the internet as at Jess Your Cars across the social media platforms, and of course, writing for Classic Car Weekly. Latest issues out at the moment. There's some good stuff in it. It is our autumn bumper issue, so there's plenty of interesting bits and pieces in there, and yeah, worth picking up and reading and enjoying. And of course, it is a preview episode, so it goes without saying that thank you to all of our listeners, and especially those in Justin near Fort
This one
Worth.
is quite a tangent, even for you.
This one's quite a tangent,
For
even for me.
fuck's sake.
However, I finally managed to get one in at least the right state as well as the right country of where the Grand Prix is. So, deep breath,
And it only
everyone.
took a state that was as big as France to do it.
Yes. Thank you to all our listeners, especially our listeners in Justin near Fort Worth, Texas. We finally got one that's location relevant. Justin is a small city in and of itself, but it does have some fun facts. The Texas Motor Speedway had a Justin mailing address until 9th of July 2005. Because it is physically located within the city of Fort Worth, Justin had the opportunity to purchase the Texas Motor Speedway, but at the time they did not have enough money to run and provide maintenance to the speedway. The United States Postal Service therefore changed the mailing address to Fort Worth, Texas. Another fun fact is one of the FBI 10 most wanted fugitives, Yasser Abdel Said, was captured in Justin on August 26, 2020. And when it comes to our usual plea for beer, if any of our listeners in the area are able to run over to the Knowles Brothers Craft Brewing Company and grab a case or two of Krieger's Hefe, that'd be ace. I thought that was pretty good.
I didn't listen.
Well, that does make a change. Thank you very much for listening if you have been, and we'll see you again soon for a review of the United States Grand Prix.